other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay, and then he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. Said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, a little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know. Just the other day, so much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you, can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time, man. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, and we're gonna have a good time then.
Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha. Welcome to another edition of White Wellness. Today, August 9th, 2021, broadcasting out of New York. And that was Harry Chapin with Cats in the Cradle way back in 1974. And he died too young. He died back when he was 38, actually, on Long Island in an auto accident back when I was just, well, a small baby, 1981. I really like that song, though, so I played it for today's broadcast. And today's broadcast is titled Rewilding Women. So that's going to be one of the focal points of the broadcast, talking about really just how we're supposed to be, because there's so much shit, crud, filth, miasma out there that's constantly, emphasis on that, onus on that, that's always telling us to be something different than what we really are. But to start off the broadcast, I wanted to wish everyone a happy Lammas. It was actually the 1st of August, so I'm about 8 days late, but I wanted to read a little bit about this from one of my books. This is a book, it's a witch's planner, kind of like, you know, like a daily planner, but it has a kind of a Eurocentric feel and flavor to it. So I wanted to read a little bit about Lammas as well as the sun spell. And this is a holiday that is observed, like I said, August 1st. So first, actually, I want to read from the Farmer's Almanac and then from the book, because the book has this Lammas sun spell. And this information is actually from the Farmer's Almanac. Surprising, to this day, still a very Eurocentric publication, the print version as well as the internet website. But here's a bit about Lammas Day, and that's spelled with one L, not two L's like the animal. This observance, traditionally observed on August 1st, marked the beginning of the harvest and especially celebrated the first wheat crop, or that of corn. It derives from the ancient English festival, the Gule of August, that's G-U-L-E, a pagan dedication of the first fruits of that early English church later converted to the Christian usage. On Lammas Day, loaves of bread were baked from the first ripened grain and brought to the churches to be consecrated. The word Lammas comes from the Old English halaf, H-L-A-F, meaning loaf, and mace, M-A-E-S-S-E, mass, or feast. Through the centuries, loaf mass became corrupted in spelling and pronounced to Lammas. To the Celts, this was Lugansaid, the feast of the wedding of the sun god and the earth goddess, and also the harvest festival. In Ireland, baskets of blueberries are still offered to a sweetheart in commemoration of the original fertility festival. In Scotland, the Lammastide fairs became famous for trial marriages that could be ended without question after a year, and that is typically referred to as hand fasting. I think that's kind of replaced, has been replaced with what we consider to be an engagement nowadays, but back in the day, our people used to do that. They would get together for a year, see if they could make it work, if they loved each other, if they could live with each other, if they wanted to have, you know, babies, and then if they could, they would go forth and make it official. Not legal in the way that we do things nowadays. Or if it didn't work, they would just go their own separate ways and find somebody else that worked for them. Much lore is associated with this day of Lammas, including this proverb: after Lammas Day, corn ripens as much by night as by day. And that's the conclusion of this little piece from the Old Farmer's Almanac. And now, a Lammas sun spell from this Witch's Planner book that I have. And every week it gives a little something, you know, a little magic, a little something very Eurocentric, very non-Talmudic, you know, non-allopathic, just something that's indicative or representative of our people. So here is the Lammas sun spell. At Lammas, we do more than just honor the first harvest. We're honoring the sun for what it lends us before it begins to honor its ancient deal and allows the days to shorten. And you might have noticed, depending on where you live, that the days are getting shorter. And of course, once it becomes the summer solstice, which is about June 20th, we go from the longest day of the year, inching towards the shortest day of the year, which is the winter solstice, the Yuletide. We're honoring the sun for what it has led us before to honor its ancient deal and allow us the days to shorten. We can also ask the sun for continued abundance and success. This is a very fecundant time of year. A lot of greenery, a lot of lushness. Things are very verdant. And that word fecundant, you'll notice it has F-E-C-U-N-C-U-N-D-A-N-T. The origin of the word cunt actually has in relation to the word fecundant, because anything to do with women, nature, will have that C-U-N, fecundity, fecundant. It means fertile, you know, lush. And that goes back to the word cunt, which is not a slur. In common times, it's become a slur, but it's not a slur. It actually means a goddess related to Kundalini, also related to cuneiform. So a lot of these things, just like everything else, I've said it on many broadcasts, I'll say it again, it's all an inversion, right? Virology is an inversion. The word cunt is an inversion. I mean, seriously, everything out there. Pornography is an inversion of tantra. I mean, there's everything. Everything is an inversion. Addiction is an inversion of ecstasy. Like, everything out there is a fucking inversion. So here is the Lammas sun spell. First, cast a circle and call on the sun at dawn, stating, "The moon's asleep, Father Sun, arise. Hearken now, the day's alive. I've come to you as day opens its eyes to harness the knowledge that renders you wise. If you're in need of goal, manifestation, or abundance, state the following. I ask for abundance, for golden success, a venture that begins from a foundation at rest. I sowed the seeds with good intention. Prosperity earned has a long-held retention. I conjure the wisdom and confidence of the sun. I banish concerns until the challenge is won. Success is made manifest through the bergamot rays of the sun and his power who coddles the day. If you want to give thanks, state the following. Father, the sun god, the keeper of warmth, the giver of light when all is forlorn. He drifts over mother when the day is just birthing, follows the path as the earth keeps on turning. The sun god drifts over us in celestial vault. Into the west, he slips and he falls, an endless cycle from the keeper of days, who steps back to sleep in the winter malaise. A swift, hearty thanks floats from tongue to above to honor the emergence of a golden, tough sun. Pretty groovy stuff right there. Nice selection of words as well. I'm always looking to read or to share something that actually is well written. I mean, there's so much poorly written articles out there by people who basically don't speak English anymore. And I'm not talking about people who speak English as a second language. I'm talking about a lot of people who speak English as a second language speak way better English than these people who just speak this ebonical kind of emoji slang, which is just, I mean, nothing could be more nauseating to me than that. That's just a sign of, well, I don't know, just being low on the totem pole, being low in the caste system, not being a Brahmana, you know, not being a top part of the caste. Remember, it's not just about being white and being part of a racial hierarchy. It's also about being elite within your own race. You can't just say, oh, I'm white, you know, everything is good. Like, you've got to work for it. At least that's how I feel. So that was that little intro right there on Lammas. I kind of missed it in regards to remembering it was on the first, but anyway, I figured it was important to state what it is, especially if maybe someone's new to this or maybe they forgot themselves as well. But I think it's always important that we make ourselves aware and we honor these holidays, because there's always something out there like, you know, pride or all of these like fake things that aren't real, are extremely, you know, just artificial, biophobic, misogynistic, toxic, dysfunctional, degenerate, you name it. So now I want to read this little piece about coming to your senses and mindfulness in nature. Nature, of course, is a very important topic. We are living in a world that is constantly trying to assault nature. It's very obvious. If it's not obvious, well, you're head is probably somewhere it doesn't need to be, but we live in a biophobic world. We live in a world that fears things like viruses, fears dirt. I've actually heard things before where a parent asked, the child was somewhere like in a public fooling system, shitstum, something like that, and they were going to be doing something where they were going to be outside and playing with dirt, and the parents actually asked if like the kids were going to like be near the dirt and get like dirty from the dirt. And look at that, we already have words in our lexicon that's dirty, that's soiled, when really the dirt and the soil is where it all starts out. But, you know, the English language is a bunch of spelling anyway. So here is this piece right here. Coming to your senses, mindfulness in nature. There is something calming but also energizing when you spend time in nature. It feels quiet, yet there is so much going on between the plants, the trees, the fungi, the birds, the bugs, and the animals. Nothing in nature exists in isolation, and everything is interconnected and interdependent. It's a spiral. You know, it's constantly that beautiful cycle of life. And this makes me think, too, how nature is a spiral. Nature is not linear, right? But look how they have taken that spiral symbol and usurped it and used it to promote pedophilia. We can't be surprised, can we? It creates a thriving ecosystem. Once you step into nature, you start to feel the energy flow. It helps you feel more alive and connected to the natural rhythms of the world. You get to feel like an explorer because nothing ever stays the same in nature. And that's one of the things that Zog fears. Zog fears things changing. Zog fears the unknown, right? And there is something so unknown about nature, right? It's it's never going to be the same. It's that intricate dance, but Zog wants everything tabulated down to like a nanometer. It's absolute psychopathy. Nature maintains mindfulness easy. We pay more attention to our experiences in nature. We observe and focus on the here and the now. It stops compulsive thinking and quiets a distracted state of mind. We get so busy with the mundane routine of life, we can forget to feel the vitality available to us in each moment. Nature reminds us. So how do you practice mindfulness in nature? And maybe you've heard this word before, mindfulness, and thought, well, what is mindfulness, right? You need to use your senses and pay attention to what surrounds you. It can be a nearby park, forest, or your own garden. Just slow down, open up, and tune in. Aim to use all five of your senses, your sensorium, everything. Notice what you see, the sounds you hear, the smells, and remember to touch too. See how the beauty and symmetry affect you and how your awareness changes. Feel the ground beneath your feet and connect as if there were no separation. Observe without attaching labels or judgments to what you are experiencing. Being in nature facilitates mindfulness because nature is experiential. You look up and see a blue jay perched on a branch in the sunlight. You watch it closely in real time. It keeps your awareness in the moment. With practice, your sensitivity gets stronger. The more you tune into your experiences, the more you receive nature's gifts of restoration and balance. And the more time you spend in nature, the easier it becomes to be mindful. By breathing deeply around the trees, moving slowly, seeing the colors and patterns on the leaves and the bark, you are present. And eventually, the stillness and power of nature begin to work their magic. There is less thinking, ruminating, or worrying, and more feeling, seeing, hearing, and breathing. And of course, Zog doesn't like any of that. I actually saw some thing the other day on Tomogram. Maybe it was one of these, you know, articles or memes or pictures that's just like satire to enrage people, but it was talking about how thinking is bad for your health. Of course they'd want you to think that, right? Because they want you to be an automaton, a raceless, sexless, low IQ automaton. You forget your problems for a while. You may notice things in nature you would normally overlook, like a blossoming flower or delicate bird close up, seeing it all with a sense of wonder. Everything is alive and you start to feel it. It deepens your connection with all living things and you see beyond yourself. And this reminds me of what I'm going to talk about after I finish this little piece about a blossoming flower. I watched the movie Brave New World the other day, the 1980 version, not the 2020 one, but we're going to talk about both of them. And in the 1980 film, they said that no one ever looks at blossoming flowers or smells flowers anymore because they found that it was a waste of time and time that could have been spent either consuming or, you know, producing something. And how Zog is that, right? How Zog is that? When you're open to the life force buzzing around in nature, it reminds you of your own life force. It nudges you to reconnect with the deeper part of yourself. Nature's stillness and presence often ignites in your own sense of presence. We may even experience a sense of inner peace and spirituality that humankind has always found in the natural world. That's why they are trying to do what they're doing with this entire psyop. Scientists in Japan have found that forest bathing, what they call Shinrin Yoko, is so healing it became part of their national health program. Mindful, quiet time spent in the forest atmosphere can lower high blood pressure and cortisol levels, improve concentration and memory whilst boosting creativity. Even spending 5 minutes being mindful in nature has health benefits. It feels like a quick mental detox or a mini vacation. We focus better afterwards, productivity improves, and our ability to be patient is renewed. The soothing sounds, the vibrant colors, and the earthy aromas found in nature all play their part. Separating from our electronic devices for a while helps us too. Either way, mindfulness in nature will leave you feeling energized, relaxed, and more centered. It may even feel like a mildly psychedelic experience once you get good at it. And you don't necessarily have to utilize psychedelics to be psychedelic or to have psychedelic experiences, to think psychedelically. I mean, you can just listen to a podcast that puts you in another state and puts you in a flow, and that can be psychedelic. So it's not just about dropping acid or, you know, munching on some psilocybin. It's about living in that psychedelic manner, which is pretty much like living in the natural way. It's not just about, you know, utilizing either synthetics or plant medicine to have the psychedelic experience. A psychedelic experience can happen without any of that. It can happen within you. A sexual experience could be psychedelic, listening to a certain song. And nature, of course, is a psychedelic. That's why they want to get rid of it, because it's a mind-expanding thing. So that was that little piece right there about mindfulness and nature. And reading that, when we were just talking about electronic devices, made me think of something else that I just saw a little while before I started the broadcast, which kind of pertains on the same vein, so I will mention it right now. It's about screen time, especially on devices, which has gone up 60% since Oyed AI. So people working from home, utilizing Netflix, doom scrolling. The article actually says doom scrolling. The average person spends viewing a screen has skyrocketed. And now a lot of people are having dry eyes, what is called MGD, meibomian gland dysfunction. It causes dry eyes. It develops due to a blockage of oil glands in the eyelids. It can also include sensations such as a burning and stinging feeling, tired eyes, watery eyes, intolerance to contact lenses, and sensitivity to light or air. So this is a major problem. Even teenagers are having issues with this. So it's not just, you know, older people. And the thing that made me think a little bit deeper whilst I was reading this is that when you're looking at these devices, it makes you not blink, actually. Screen time slows the natural blinking rate, so counter that with more intentional blinking by taking occasional breaks from one's device and interacting with the 3D world, aka nature. That's a very good tip right there. Also, something else is when you look, follow the 20-20-20 rule, look at something 20 feet away for a period of 20 seconds. Every 20 minutes you spend on a screen just to kind of allow your eyes to get a break. You could also wear blue blockers. I always wear those when I'm doing a broadcast. Right now I'm wearing my AM ones. I wear my PM ones once it becomes darker in the day. Staying hydrated can really help as well. Staying lipidated, making sure you're getting enough saturated fats. Not too many, but not too little either. Everyone's got their window of what works for them. Stay away from the PUFAs. This article, of course, is recommending that we consume omega-3 fatty acids. I think you know, if you're listening to the broadcast for a while, those are not good for you. Those are immunosuppressive in the long term. They are anti-inflammatory short term, but they are definitely not something that you want to take. Probably one of the worst supplements out there. That's why Zog promotes them. And yes, you definitely want to make sure you're blinking, like I had said prior. And I was thinking about this when I was reading this before. People who have those like crazy eyes where they just look like they're like possessed, like sometimes when they show us these people who are supposedly school shooters, who knows if they're patsies, who knows if the whole thing is a fucking psyop, doesn't really matter. Anyway, they always have those eyes where they look just kind of like insane, what they would call in visual diagnosis as young sangpaku. Someone like Charles Manson has those eyes too. That looks like someone who's like possessed or on SSRIs, right? Which are a judicial pharma that's incredibly hard to get off of, that makes people into zogbies. But you don't blink when you have that look. So in a way, if people are becoming these doom scrollers on their device, what if this doom scrolling is mimicking the effects of what an SSRI would actually do to a person? Just something I was pondering a little bit earlier, and I'll leave it at that if anyone else wants to ponder it themselves. All right, so a little bit right there about mitigating screen time. And I've also been focusing on moving away from my mobile phone. I think this is a good thing. A lot of people are actually doing this. They're going back to like the flip phone, like the 3G phones, which I had one of those back in the day. You probably did too. Maybe you still have one of those things. Maybe you never got into a smartphone, which is great, actually, when you think about it, because now you don't have to rewind and get rid of it. But I've been distancing myself from utilizing it. I've been taking all my information off of it, like my pictures and stuff like that, deleting all useless applications. I'm not a big application person anyway. I think applications are typically for retardates, to be quite honest. So I'm distancing myself from it. I have a hard top, or a laptop rather, that I use for most of my computing, and I'd rather use this. I'd rather sit down, have the tabs, have the keyboard. I prefer it, and this is just seems more better for me. And plus, I have it wired too. That's another thing. I have my laptop wired with my Wi-Fi turned off. And I was listening to a broadcast yesterday where they mentioned that you can actually buy this device. I haven't looked into it yet. That you can get for your mobile, for your phone, and that can actually make your phone wired whilst you're using it. So something to consider. Maybe if you out there are conscious about non-native EMF, electromagnetic frequency mitigation, very important thing, an invisible thing, but very, very important, especially as they crank up the 5G. And now I see all these adverts on the YouTube promoting it. Oh, it's free. This is so great. 5G is here. And like, no, we don't need it. We did fine with 3G. We did fine with dial-up, to be honest. I can go back to that. You know, if we're able to knock out all the crud that's been happening in the last 30 years, transsexualism, you know, all this just vile corruption, the whole woke culture, the whole BIPOC culture. I'll go back to dial-up if we can wipe the slate on all that. I'm sure most of you listening who are aware feel the same way. Okay, on to the next topic. So first off, we talked a little bit about lamas, then we talked about nature, we talked about moving away from our mobile devices, all good things, all really good things, all white things, all racial things, all natural things. So now I wanted to read this little piece about how to be selfish. This is a nice piece. I found this morning in my inbox. This comes from the Sovereign Business newsletter. Comes out about every day or so, and real good information just about navigating the world. There's a lot of crud out there, more so than ever before. It's easy to get hoovered into it. It's easy to get our emotions caught up in the mix. Of course, if you eat a diet that hormonally balances you and balances your blood sugar, you will be less likely to be reactive. Doesn't mean you're going to be like basically like dead, emotionally dead. You're just going to have a certain amount of stoicism that keeps you like, you know, firm. And that's what we need right now. We need those type of people. So how to be selfish? If there's one thing that has suffered more than any other from the attacks of the Jutrix, it is the self. That's your true self, the real you. Most systems of the Jutrix are designed to replace the authority and independent regulation of the self with external sources, school, religion, quote, medicine, money, legal. It's a very long list. Some systems of the Jutrix are even designed to engineer the consensual murder of the self. That's when someone willingly severs the connection with their true self and buries part or all of that entity where it does not see the light of day. Big Pharma spends billions drug dealing poisonous substances into the world that fundamentally shift not only your connection with yourself, but also erode its grounding in reality. The marketing term for this is, quote, medicine. The attacks are from all sides on many different levels. So why is the, quote, self public enemy number one? Because a population full of beings who have a strong bond with the self are impossible to control. This is probably why there is no, quote, good word in our language to represent someone exhibiting a positive self-interest. All the best we've got is, quote, selfish. The word, quote, selfish has been vilified to a degree that it has become one of the siren songs used by the, quote, mob of the Jutrix using to exert their influence. Label someone selfish and the mob knows what to do next. Currently, you're being selfish if you don't wear the mask in the chat feed bag and block your oxygen source to, quote, protect others. You don't poison yourself with untested gene therapy being passed off as a, quote, vaccination to, quote, protect others. And I wouldn't give a fuck what it was. Gene therapy, vaccination, I don't care what it is. They're peddling it. You know it's crud. You don't participate in a new form of, quote, racism to fix the old form of racism. Well, maybe this person who wrote this doesn't understand racialism. But anyway, I'll go on. You are interested in how your actions, words, deeds make someone else feel when you are sharing the truth. I don't. You don't wallow in shame or guilt regarding the words or deeds of others for which you bear no responsibility. These are all considered forms of being, quote, selfish, right? You choose not to share surplus resources, time, or connections with organizations that exist to, quote, make the world better in name only. You would rather use your time and talent to lift others up rather than dim your brilliance so as not to make anyone feel bad. And those are all things that Zog is considering selfish. Well, I'm proud to be all of those things, and I hope you listening feel the same way. To anyone with a well-cared-for self, these terms might be considered ridiculous and even completely irrational. But we have a world where caring for the self, or nurturing the self, or overtly acting in the interest of the self is villainized. How dare you? Is there someone who is more worthy of that care and enrichment from yourself than your own self? For totalitarian control, the self must be eradicated. That's why choosing to be, quote, selfish is the best sense of the word. In the best sense of the word is probably the greatest gift you can offer to the world. In an insane world, selfish is a virtue. It's the only whole and intact version of yourself that will be able to deliver maximum impact to the world. If you are on this planet this time, you are not here to be a slave. You did not choose to be a consumer. You are not a worthless bottom feeder who does nothing but take. The real you, yourself, came here for important work. If you cannot do that work, if you allow the Jutrix to turn you into somebody else, and a lot of people are opting for that. I just found out yesterday and today that someone I know for years, since I was a child, got the Oyedepo AI vaccination to keep a job. Didn't want to do it. Didn't want to talk about it. You always get that now. People have like this wall. It's like, I don't want to talk about it, you know, and it's just like, it's over. And then I heard someone else was getting it soon. Someone who's been a family friend since the 80s. Someone who's getting it because their daughter has allergies. When allergies are a cause of vaccination in the first place. I mean, the inversions are so deep. Like the other day, I was actually at the yoga studio. Sometimes I go and I do yoga like in person with other people. Most of the time I do it here in the house. But I was overhearing this Zago conversation between two people, two whites, probably in their late 40s, early 50s, maybe a touch older. And they were talking about the virus and the pandemic like it was real. And then they mentioned someone having the big C or cancer and having to shield themselves from the virus even more seriously than anybody else. And like, I'm thinking to myself, whilst I'm on, I'm overhearing this conversation, just, you know, trying to put my shoes on and put my stuff in my bag. I'm like, don't they know that a viral detox can actually dissolve a cancer tumor? And at that moment, I'm thinking like, I am completely on a different plane of existence, a different reality. It almost felt like it was a psychedelic experience because what I know and what I was thinking, if I had even uttered that to them, they would have thought I was like funny farm material, you know, like that was almost a psychedelic experience because it's so completely opposite of what most people believe. But I mean, the average person is gone. Totally gone, you know, not just majorities, but many of our people are completely and totally gone. I was talking to someone yesterday, an old friend, actually, who got the vaccination a while back, actually, because, well, their doctor recommended it. And I asked this person what their thoughts on like climate change were or was. And the response I got back was, do you mean rain? I was like, whoa. But a lot of these people who have gotten the vaccination, they've been on a cocktail of Judicial Pharmas for years. Those demineralize you. They have fluoride in them. They are mind-altering. And not just SSRIs. They could be benzos. They can be anything. But yeah, I mean, they really, it's a chemical lobotomy, essentially, is what it is. I've never, you know, gone on those as a prescription. I would always rather just work it out myself. You know, like we have to do the work. Taking the Judicial Pharmas, wallowing in addiction, that is not going to heal our trauma. That is not going to heal our hormonal imbalances. That is not going to heal our gut issues. The only way to heal is to walk through it, right? Everything else is just, it's a band-aid and it's a lack of courage, but a lot of people just don't have that oomph to walk through it. And yeah, it takes a lot of energy and just grit and wanting to do it. Like, not everybody wants to heal. It may sound kind of mind-seeing, but not everybody wants to do the work to heal. A lot of people like having the identity of their problem. And I'm definitely not one of those people, but I'm seeing that a lot, just in general, and then with Oyed AI kind of being an add-on with all of this, you know? All right, so that was that for that little tidbit of the broadcast. So now I want to talk a little bit about Brave New World, which of course was a novel that was authored by Aldous Huxley quite some time ago, back in the 30s, if memory serves correctly. And I consider Huxley to not be a prophet of the future, but to be an architect of the future. I believe when this book was being written, just like 1984, which was written in 1948, I believe, these books were not prophetic in regards to the future. They were templates, if you will. So Brave New World is a dystopian social science fiction novel written by Englishman Aldous Huxley in 1931 and published in 1932. Largely set in a futuristic world state whose citizens are environmentally engineered into an intelligence-based social hierarchy. The novel anticipates huge scientific advancements in reproductive technology, sleep learning, psychological manipulation, and classical conditioning that are combined to make a dystopian society which is challenged by only a single individual, the story's protagonist. Huxley followed this book with a reassessment in essay form, Brave New World Revisited, 1958, and his final novel, Island, 1962, the utopian counterpart. The novel is also often compared to George Orwell's 1984, published in 1949. Okay. So yeah, this is a book that I actually started listening to on tape about, I don't know, 5 years ago, and it really just didn't hold my attention. Sometimes I have to listen to something where the author's or the orator's voice is like, I guess, enchanting, and this orator didn't have the most enchanting voice. It was an English accent, which I think typically sounds quite nice, but it just wasn't the most vivacious English accent. And I guess at the time, maybe I just wasn't ready to listen to it, whatever it may be. But anyway, the other day I watched the film. It was actually like a mini series, as I said, came out in 80. It's about 3 hours long. It's available on YouTube. I posted it on Telegram for anyone who wants to check it out. I think it's worth checking out, especially in regards to what we have going on nowadays in the world. There's something that they do in the movie called nature nausea programming, or more like pogromming, where they use methodology to basically make someone feel nauseous in regards to nature so they can spend all their time consuming and producing. And there's some other very unsettling aspects of this film. One of them is some of the stuff that they're teaching youngsters. They're teaching youngsters basically to witness people voluntarily dying from a drug overdose, what they call soma. There's this drug in the movie called soma that every time someone feels the least bit stressed or annoyed, they just pop a soma and everything goes back to normal, or what they perceive to be normal, which is just, well, how different is that than the society we currently have today, right? This judicial pharma insane asylum that we have today all over the world. So there are many scenes where they're teaching children to basically watch people die from a voluntary drug overdose, which is pretty horrific. That's horrific for anyone to watch, but especially for a child. And soma actually is something that is mentioned in the Rig Veda. That is a book, an old Aryan book, a compendium of Tantra, Ayurveda, and yoga. And it wasn't just yoga in regards to asana or pose. It was also like, you know, yoga means union. So it was all just about spiritual things. It wasn't just about actually doing physical yoga, but they mentioned soma in the Rig Veda, and they never say actually what it is. Maybe it was a plant, a hallucinogen that originated or was available many, many years ago. Maybe it's no longer. Some people say that it was psilocybin. Some say it was cannabis. I think F. Gordon Wasson, who was an author, I believe maybe he was an ethnobotanist like McKenna, like Terence McKenna. He went all over the world with his wife and checked out these psychedelic plants. I think he said it was cannabis. And also, interestingly enough, there is a judicial pharma called Soma, which is a muscle relaxant. So there's that as well. But back to the part about the movie, they have youngsters basically watching people die from a drug overdose. And they also have something in the movie where they are teaching children. I was aghast when I heard this whilst I was watching it the other day. They're teaching children to find the zipper. It was a game called Find the Zipper. And to me, that sounds like child abuse. Unless they're finding the zipper somewhere else on someone's clothing, but that definitely sounds like pedophilia, right? Like what they've been trying to legalize for more than a century. That was shocking to me. And something else that was really mind-seeing was that the way they relate sexually in the movie is just like, it's like the Tinder culture. It's like, oh, are you available? Are you available? Like, no, nothing like deep, you know, it's basically the pornification of sex. Like on the last show, I talked about porn sex and then healthy sex. So typically in the movie, someone would go up to someone and say, oh, do you want to be engaged tonight? Like, oh no, sorry, I'm engaging so-and-so, or I engaged so-and-so the other day. And by engage, they don't mean like an engagement ring where people make a commitment to basically get legally married. They meant like engaging the person in sex. And it was just so casual, like, oh, no, I'm going to be with him, I'm going to be with her. And if you were engaging a small amount of people per a month or a year, like it was like, oh, my God, are you serious? You only engaged two people this month? Like, what's wrong with you? So it was a promotion of all of this Tinder-like just meat market sexual culture where you just pick people for sex and then you just go on your way, essentially. It was really pretty vile, actually, really vile. But how different is that than what we have going on nowadays, which is totally and completely promoted, right? And there's a five-part caste system in this movie. There is Alpha, and there's also Alpha Plus, Alpha Plus Plus, and Alpha Minus. There's Beta, there's Gamma, there's Delta, and there's Epsilon. So after I watched the film, I was like, I've got to do some research in regards to why the OIVs are promoting the Delta variant is so deadly, right? So in the film, Deltas are one of the lower caste people. They wear green and they're really kind of creepy looking. They have these like blacked out eyes, which is like just super, super weird. They almost look like they've been beaten up, like they have like a black eye or something like that. Very, very, very creepy. And they're not that smart at all. Not that smart at all. They're kind of just like used as kind of like the lower kind of like rung of people, which is no different than what they're doing nowadays with society, right? So the Delta variant is what Big Z or Zog has been promoting for, well, I don't even know how long this is going on. But anyway, it's all over the place. It's totally deadly, shedding kike protein. If you've gotten the OIVA vaccination times two, you could still contract this variant. Of course, this is all just kosher theater. It's a hoax. It's germ theory of virology, which is probably one of the biggest hoaxes of the last century plus. Bigger hoax than the Hala hoax, bar none. Allopathy in general is the biggest hoax around. Way bigger hoax and psyop than XDNity. Because plenty of people have moved past XDNity, yet they are still tethered to allopathy. So here are the five caste systems, or the levels of caste in Brave New World. We have the Alphas, who are the intellectually superior group, who run the factories. They are the highest social class. Then we have the Betas, which have adequate intelligence, living similarly to Alphas, but their positions require less thinking. The Gammas are semi-skilled workers, low-risk professionals, or experts at repetitive tasks. And then we have the Deltas, who are mass-produced, literally, genetically created twins. Everyone's made in a lab, by the way. No one actually has sex to create a baby. They're, like, horrified that women actually could do that. And Deltas lack individuality and tend to menial jobs. And then we have the Epsilons, also mass-produced, like the Deltas. They can't read or write. They work undesirable jobs like sewage labor and foundry workers, and are referred to as semi-morons. So we have a caste class system in this world already, regardless of Voyeur AI, but it seems to be falling more in line ever since we've had the Voyeur AI thing going on. So thinking about all this, whilst I was watching the movie, I was like, I gotta do a little bit of investigation in regards to Delta. Why are the OIVs utilizing the word Delta? Now, of course, these are all Greek letters. We know that, right? And for a while, they were saying, oh, we can't say it's the China virus. We can't say it's the India virus because, of course, that would be racist. We can't do that, right? But there's a bigger agenda than just that. Plus, these are also brain waves, alpha, delta, you know, like that. So here's a little bit about what I was able to find out in regards to Delta. The word Delta comes from the Phoenician word Daleth, D-A-L-E-T-H, which is the fourth letter of the Hebrew alphabet, also sometimes spelled Dalet, so D-A-L-E-T. From Hebrew today, the Dalet is associated with the word Dal, D-A-L, meaning weak or needy. In a more spiritual sense, this represents lowliness and perhaps a sense of humility as well. If we connect this aspect of the latter to the original or the origin letter's name, however, we come out with an optimistic attitude. And I put triple parentheses around that. Despite Dalet being lowly, it is also a door, which can represent an opportunity for transition from one thing to something which is hopefully better. Again, triple parentheses. And of course, optimistic and better in their terminology is tikkun olam. It's their version of peace, their version of utopia, which is a hell and a nightmare for everybody else. So that's why they're using the thing, calling it Delta. Delta means weak or needy. People who are falling for this psyop are weak, needy, and spiritually lacking. There's no other way to put it. That's what it is, right? How out of touch could someone be with themselves and nature to literally believe that a fucking virus is wafting around is going to kill everybody? Like B.J. Palmer said, Dr. B.J. Palmer, the chiropractor of yore, if germ theory was true, nobody would be alive to believe it. It's just, it's incredible to me. I mean, I didn't grow up with a belief in contagion in general. I wasn't raised like that. I wasn't raised to fear germs. That wasn't the way I was raised. But even if you were, you've got to, you know, come to a realization and say, wow, they're fucking full of shit. I mean, allopathy in general is full of shit. I mean, they can help you with a broken bone and stuff like that and surgery in certain instances, but their, quote, disease management, their views on virology are just sick hoaxes, like a sicker hoax than religion, because it's a bigger religion than Christianity. It's bigger than Islam. It's bigger than Judaism. It's bigger than any of those other monotheistic piles of filth, you know? This is the biggest religion in the world. Remember last year during the thick of Voyeur AI, I did a show where I used a picture of Christ the Redeemer, that very famous statue of JC with the arms spread out that's in Rio in Brazil. And they had taken that statue and they had done something where they had put the allopath, the white coat with the stethoscope on Christ the Redeemer. This is a fucking religion. It's a world religion now, right? So here is a bit about the 2020 version of Brave New World. This was an American science fiction drama series, loosely based on the classic novel of the same name by Aldous Huxley. It premiered last year, July 15, during Voyeur AI, the thick of Voyeur AI, in October of last year. So that was like 3 months. The series was canceled after one season. I think there was only like 5 or 6 episodes. It was like a mini series. I'm assuming they were an hour long, but I don't know. And I watched a trailer the other day for it. I think Demi Moore is in it. I didn't recognize anybody else who's like a well-known Hollywood person. But they mentioned in the movie something about a virus on the loose. I mean, oh my God, like how much more predictive programming could you possibly ever get? It's fucking ridiculous, right? The series, quote, imagines a utopian society that has achieved peace and stability through the prohibition of monogamy, privacy, money, family, and history itself. And, well, doesn't that sound like what Big Z is trying to do in regards to utilizing OID AI to promote this Brave New World ZWO agenda? They've already been villainizing monogamy in the family for a really long time. Big Zog or Big Brother has been up our bums and around our necks and looking over our backs for a long, long time, especially since the advent of the smartphone. Money, they're trying to possibly eradicate, it looks like, or make it totally useless. And history, well, they're always trying to make it fake. In the movie, they actually refer to history of yesteryear in primitive times as histobunk, which is a portmanteau, histobunk. And it comes from a Henry Ford quote that history is bunk. They kind of idolize Henry Ford, which is actually kind of unique because Henry Ford was a well-known anti-Semite. He used to put a copy of the Dearborn Independent, his own newspaper, in the glove box of every Model T that he sold. And all of those writings eventually became the 1- and 2-volume book set, The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. I have both of those books. I bought them on Amazon Primate before they did their big purge. So in this updated miniseries of Brave New World, which of course came out 40 years after the original one in 1980, an artificial intelligence system named Indra, I-N-D-R-A, also connects citizens via a wireless network. So here we are with the premise of a society that could have peace and stability through the prohibition of monogamy, privacy, money, family, and history. And then we have this AI system shitstem that connects people via a wireless network. And we also have a side narrative of a virus on the loose. I mean, that's what's happening right now. If you know what's going on, it's clear as day. And they can this show after 3 months. So maybe it's something that's worth watching if you can find it. I think I'm going to check it out next time I decide to sit down and watch some video entertainment. And you might be asking yourself, why do they call it Indra? What's Indra? This is very interesting. Indra is a Vedic deity in Vedicism or Hinduism. So Indra is a Sanskrit word, Sanskrit, of course, being an Indo-Aryan language. Indra is the king of Svarga, heaven, and the Devas, gods. He is associated with lightning, thunder, storms, rains, river flows, and war. He is depicted as a powerful hero, but one who constantly gets in trouble with his drunken, hedonistic, and adulterous ways, and the gods who disturb sages as they meditate because, get this, he fears self-realized human beings may become more powerful than him. And this is what this is all about. Like, they know that a self-realized human being is more powerful than them. And that's why they're trying to dumb everyone down with vaccinations, with low-quality food, with low-quality water, with all the MK Ultra and psychological abuse and everything they put out there, because they know that if you're a self-realized and self-actualized human being, you are more powerful than the Zog Beast. And that's what they fear, especially for the awakened Aryan. The only adversary of the Talmudic system, shitstem, is the Aryan. So very, very interesting right there, and how it all goes back to Vedicism, to our original religion. Very, very, very interesting right there. I was glad I could piece that together and find a lot. It's actually not that hard. You know, it's not that hard to find these things. You just kind of have to have a zest for it, right? And just know where to look. I mean, because there's so many avenues on the internet which are just bum steers, total waste of time, Nantucket sleigh ride to the max, right? But you can find good things if you know where to look, absolutely. And something else I wanted to mention. In this film, in the original one, not the one that came out last year, they wear a letter on them, like an A, a B, a G, a D, or an E, so you know if they're alpha, beta, gamma, delta, or epsilon, which is kind of reminiscent, I guess, of the Scarlet letter, which came out, you know, years after. But now they're having these vaccination passport t-shirt where you can buy this t-shirt from a place called vaxcardclothing.com. And you can, for $38 US, you can buy this gray t-shirt that has a little pocket with a zip and a plastic piece. It's like if you ever get like one of those orders where you can see that they adhere the label or the invoice rather on one of those like plastic slips and then like stick it to the parcel. Now you can have one of these things on your, you know, your breast pocket of your shirt. It says vaccination record card right below. And then you actually can slip the card right in there. And it goes on to say, show the world you are ready to reintegrate into society with this innovative short sleeve tee. Clear chest pocket to display your vaccine record card or wherever else you want. Increase your social credit score by 19% with this classic fit shirt made of the newest in space age materials. It's 100% cotton. I don't know what space age materials actually mean, but yeah. And it says launched in 2021, Vax Card Clothing is an experiment by Kala, that's the brand, C-A-L-A, as we begin the journey of being together again. Oh, together again. How lovely. And the website is really very much a visual assault. It's all black and white with these like flashing things. It almost looks like something that they probably used when they took Alex DeLarge to the Ludovico Correction Facility in 1971's A Clockwork Orange, and they exposed him to all types of torturous imagery. It's not very good to look at. I'm going to be Xing it out right now because it's visually unsettling. So yeah, and I was thinking about this earlier today in regards to the vaccine passport, the vaccine card. Is the vaccination passport the new immigration status? Because think about it, Jews are known for being rootless cosmopolitans, right? They want to have citizenship here and here and here and here and here. So is this vaccination passport that's supposedly going to give you access to all of these things in the society, is this like the new kind of like, you know, status of what country you're allowed to like go into? Like, will the vaccination passport make you into a borderless, rootless cosmopolitan? Just something I'm thinking out loud about. It possibly could be. I mean, they have a lot of snarly stuff up their sleeve, but a lot of people aren't going for it. A lot of people are not going to go for this. Even people who aren't racial, even people who don't necessarily comprehend terrain theory, you know, as well as maybe some of us do over here, you know, but they know deep down that something is awry. And there are plenty of people in the quote, racialist movement who are dumb as dirt, honestly, low vibe, dumb as dirt, don't have a clue what's going on. They think just because they know that white genocide is going on or that, you know, blacks have a lower IQ than whites, that they know everything. And they know very, very little, because I see it all over Tomlin Graham all the time on the regular. Many people have absolutely not a clue what's going on, not a clue. It seems like they're spending all their time just laughing at memes when they should be thinking about the future, thinking about how they're going to be self-sufficient, honing their skills, spiritually preparing themselves with pranayama. I mean, there are so many things you could be doing right now, and you should be doing them. I'm doing them. So I'm not just saying it and not doing it. I do the work myself. The person you hear on this broadcast is the person I am in real life. It's the person I've always been. It's not just like I found something out a couple of years ago and this is me. Like when I finally found out who was pulling the strings and that there was a white genocide agenda, that was about 4 years ago, but I've always been someone who's been aware of corruption. I mean, I've known about the ills of vaccination since the 80s. I've known about allopathy's ills since the 80s. Like, I've known a lot of these things for a very long time. So this isn't just like some flash in the pan persona. This is exactly who I am. Okay, onward to the meat of the broadcast. So far we talked about llamas. We talked about getting back into nature, kind of cutting the relationship with our mobile. We talked about how to be selfish and how that's actually a good thing. And then we talked a little bit about Brave New World. I'd recommend, like I said, watching the 1980s version as well as the 2021. And one of the things I liked about the 1980s version was that they actually spoke in a very proper way. It sounded more like a British English than a American English, but if you watch old movies from like the 40s and the 50s, it almost sounds like what most modern day people would think was a British English, because people spoke with more of a of a properness, although there are certain, you know, variants of British English, like the Cockney accent, which really don't have that properness to it that other ones do. But I always like when you can hear those, you know, those good words. There actually were a couple of words in the movie that actually stumped me, and I like that. I like learning new words, and I want to know every word off the bat, so that's always a good thing. Okay, so now I want to get into the topic of rewilding women, because that's the title of the broadcast. And I found some very, very good information in this book that I've been reading as of late. The book is called Woman, Be Wild, The Path to Feminine Awakening, Empowerment, and Freedom, written by someone who just goes by the name Indigo. And this was a gal who grew up, I believe, in the Mormon religion. Of course, all monotheistic Abrahamic religion is inherently misogynistic, inherently biophobic. You probably knew that already. So let me just have a sip of some goat milk. I think I'm actually just going to put a little song on for everybody so I can have my blood sugar balancing snack and then prepare for a bit of oration after this little song. So let's see what we can put on. Some groovy song. Oh, okay. I know what song I'm going to put on. I love this song. I've used this one on the broadcast before, and I'm going to play it for you right now, and I will see everyone in just a couple of minutes.
I love to change the world.
All right, that was 10 years later with I'd Love to Change the World back in 1971. And we're listening to some good 70s tunes today on the broadcast. The other tune, Cats in the Cradle from the year 1974. I like those tunes of that generation, of that time. So let's do a little bit of oration now from this this lovely book, Woman Be Wild, The Path to Feminine Awakening, Empowerment, and Freedom. And I've been reading this, one of my summer reading books that I've been reading this one typically whilst at the beach. I think it's a great book so far. I think it will probably be good for men too, but it's definitely more of a female-centric book. There's no doubt about that. So here we go. And this is from a chapter called Where the Wild Things Are. Maybe you think of that Maurice Sendak book, Where the Wild Things Are. At least I do when I hear that phrase. I read that book as a youngster, but my, wouldn't that be frightening if you went off into dreamland and all of a sudden there were all these monsters everywhere? It sounds kind of like a scary book, but here we go. And all of this relates to just being an Aryan, not just being a white person, because anyone can be white who's born white. It's about being Aryan. It's about our connection with nature. It's about optimizing ourselves. It's about embracing nature, embracing the sacred relationship between men and women, seeing the powers that men and women both have, not participating in any of the misogyny or the misandry that the culture completely promotes, which is just awful. I see so much of that in this supposed movement, which I want nothing to do with, to be honest. I've been mulling this over for quite some time, but I don't want anything to do with this movement. It's full of just low vibe people. I want to start a new movement, one that obviously has a base in being racial, but is way more than just that. Of course, that's going to be our base, but it's going to be more than that. It's going to be health oriented. It's going to be conscious. It's going to have to do with yoga and just cooking and like all the things that we can do to be the best version of ourselves and be fully Aryan. Our environment has trained us to avoid our more subtle senses than keep us present and truly alive. Rather than tune into the intelligence of our bodies, our intuition, our natural desires, our honest needs, we cram and suppress them with food, substances, entertainment, and countless forms of distraction to numb out from what we would otherwise feel and experience. And that's a big part of this agenda. Think about the soma in Brave New World. Numb it out, right? Don't deal with it. Don't deal with your trauma. Just numb it out however you can, right? We have been civilized to death, meaning we have traded connection for control. We have traded happiness for a false sense of safety. If we knew how beautiful the wild truly is, we would never leave it. We would never attempt to escape ourselves for the empty promise that something more lies beyond what we have been naturally given to be, to feel, be, and have in our very moment. When we can no longer feel or sense our wild, natural selves or a wild and natural world, we disconnect from our purpose and our power. We have become so desensitized and so afraid to feel that we are almost incapable of detecting how far off balance our world has become. We have not been encouraged to sit with our feelings, but taught to avoid them. We have not been guided to deepen our connections with ourselves and the earth around us, but trained to build walls of separation. We have not been allowed to seek out a natural way of life and instead have been conditioned to accept an artificial experience made up of artificial frequencies, artificial foods, artificial landscapes, and artificial communication as normal and even desirable. When we cannot wake up to the fact that the environment we were born into simply does not allow for a connected experience, we struggle to learn how to choose and create an environment that does. Artificial experience is hell on earth. It keeps us in a cycle and system that we would never choose to create ourselves, strung along with false promise that we are receiving and experiencing civil advancement, comfort, and protection. This artificial experience is robbing us of our lives. It keeps us in a comfy, steady, neutral, never aware enough to feel too much pain, never aware enough to feel too much joy. We have flatlined. This emotional death allows us to coast without exposing ourselves to the lows of disappointment, devastation, and failure. In turn, We sacrifice the highs of immense pleasure, delight, and joy. We are not present. We are not present because we are afraid to feel. We are afraid to accept what is. We are afraid of the wild. And that is definitely true. Look at Oyed AI. Look at many people in this world, regardless of Oyed AI, right? Oyed AI has just been a magnification of all of this, right? Crazy, crazy shit. Raw, sober presence is what leads to real and lasting intimacy in our relationship with ourselves, with others, and ultimately everything around us. Our ability to consciously choose and create our own reality is dependent upon our own level of presence. Presence is what brings us to peak life experiences. It unlocks the world of our dreams, granting access to all we desire to feel and see. Once we come to the realization that now is all we have, every waking moment becomes sacred. Presence is what links and binds spiritual experience with physical experience, and is what allows us to see that they are not separate. With this realization, we can find lasting personal joy, and through that, create a collective heaven on earth. Connect to yourself in this moment by sinking into your senses. Feel your body and place your attention on your breath. Can you notice and appreciate the beauty of the exact moment you are in? The shape of the room, the comfort of the couch, your bed, your floor, the clothes you're wearing, and how your body feels loved and held by them. The smell of your home and how it welcomes you. The sound of people walking and talking as they passed. Even the taste of your own mouth. If you've ever wondered about the purpose of life or our existence here on earth, it is nothing more than to feel it. This is the most profound and obvious, yet elusive truth we have yet to embrace. The whole point of being here on earth is to know and feel what it means to be alive, what it is to feel our unique expression as a woman. Life is lived in our enjoyment. Pay attention to the word enjoyment. There are clues built into our language. Enjoyment. Enjoyment. In joy in the moment. Joined in the moment. When I say life is lived in our enjoyment, I do not mean that life is experienced as joy alone. I mean that life is only lived when we are joined with the moment, no matter what it brings. That is the key to real and lasting happiness. It is the only way to live authentically. It is impossible for us to remain joined with the moment if we are plugged into a system that prefers compliance over creativity and achievement over balance. Taking control of our own experience allows us to uniquely express ourselves in our individual feminine embodiment. It is what brings us back to our bodies, back to feeling, back to sensuality, back into the wild. Your senses bring you back to presence. They bring you back to life. This is where the wild things are. Returning to the wild means returning to your senses. It means committing to sensual living. It means being fully present. The question is, are you willing to join yourself with each moment? Are you willing to feel it all? Great stuff right there. Very, very nice stuff. And that is one of the problems that we have going on in the world today, is that, unfortunately. It's a big problem. It's a really big problem. And it keeps on becoming a bigger problem as time goes on. As people become more disconnected from themselves, from nature, from everything. There's a lot of disembodiment going on. Transsexualism is a great example of that. Even people who just wear tons of makeup and just look completely fake and different than who they are, that's a form of disembodiment. That's a form of body dysmorphic disorder, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, not to say you have to never wear makeup, but if you're spending like 3 hours like contouring your face and wearing fake nails and fake teeth and fake hair, there's a problem. Not only is there a problem psychologically, there is a biological and physical problem why those things aren't growing. So you have to look at that. But this culture just says take a soma. Put a mask on it, change your reality with a mind-altering substance. Don't walk through the trauma. Don't do that. That's too messy. You don't want to do that. We do, actually. We don't want to do anything that Big Z tells us to do. Always do the opposite, because whatever they tell you to do is a walk off a cliff, essentially. Okay, here we go on the book and talking a little bit about how women are basically suppressed in this culture, and we definitely are. There's definitely that. A lot of people may not be aware of it. I wasn't always aware of it. And it looks like this supposed non-existent movement is very much not aware of it. They're actually fueling the antithesis of such. I want to be very clear that this book is not an anti-male book or movement. This is a movement of sovereignty, healing, balance, and restoration for both women and men. We have the unique opportunity to influence the world in a way that will allow us to live in more peace, love, and love together than we have previously experienced. Whilst my message is primarily for women, men also have an interest in answering the call of the wild and taking up the cause of the wild woman. Anytime a system, shitstem, is thrown out of balance, all parts of the system are adversely affected. When one front tire on the car is underinflated, the entire vehicle is thrown out of alignment and is not addressed, will cause major damage and eventually a crash. When the natural, wild nature of women is suppressed, when they are controlled, degraded, hurt, and abused, it is not only keeping women from attaining what they are capable of, it also cripples men. It is if the right leg has shot the left leg in the foot in order to get ahead, not realizing the health and strength of both is necessary for either to achieve its purpose. The metaphors abound for this principle of balance of true divine feminine and masculine power or function. Neither can claim supremacy or achieve victory by suppressing the other. As more and more men come to realize that they only stand to gain by encouraging women to rediscover and embrace their wild nature, their lives become richer, more fulfilling, and their own masculine power will be enhanced. When true balance is achieved, both sexes are able to experience uninhibited joy and pleasure, which leads to great awakening of higher consciousness. This begs the question, how can men help? The greatest support men can provide in this environment of safety, love, acceptance, and encouragement. As women shed cultural conditioning or conditioning, heal from painful past experiences, and express their natural feminine sexuality. This will require men to go through the same process of overcoming the limiting beliefs and the conditioned behaviors that have been passed down to them as they have accepted regarding feminine nature, energy, sexuality, and power. And I think that we both have been passed down those, those societal myths about women. You know, both men and women have been passed down those myths about feminine nature, energy, sexuality, and power. And a lot of these myths play a big role in the monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, as well, of course, as allopathy. Allopathy is the global religion. Make no mistake about that. Oyed Ai is a ritual induction of that. So, yeah. All right, let's go on to the next passage in the book. Let's see. Oh, this is very, very interesting. And we also will get a chance to talk a little bit more about Vedicism right here. But this is completely very, very interesting. And it talks about just God, you know, and the whole idea of God being a man, like how indicative of the Talmudic monotheistic stuff that, of course, God would be a guy, right? Like, doesn't a Hasid wake up every morning and thank Yahweh that he's not a woman, a Gentile, or an animal? So here is a bit about God and more. Much of the repressive patriarchal culture, and I think the patriarchal culture that we have is like this pseudo-autogynephilic patriarchal culture, like I've talked about before. It's pretty obvious with these freak Jews who are either afraid of Aryan women or want to be them. And of course, you know, most Jews getting razor raped or circumcised on the eighth day during the first puberty cycle atrophies the hypothalamus and the amygdala. I mean, when you get circumcised anyway, it atrophies the hypothalamus and the amygdala, but more so during the eighth day. That's why they do it that day. Muzzies do it, I think, around age 13. That's considered like a second puberty, the one that we usually associate with puberty. They do it then, so they can atrophy. And it's probably more don't know if it's more traumatic, but maybe the pain is more recognizable. Because, I mean, sometimes babies will disassociate when they're being assaulted like this. And there are allopaths who are actually circumfetishists. That's someone who has a fetish for circumcising babies. That is a thing, unfortunately. So here is a bit about this. But yeah, I think this idea, when people are talking about smashing the patriarchy, they're kind of really talking about getting rid of these Jewish ideas, you know, this Jewish ideology, this misogynistic Jewish ideology, which so many people are still falling for these Talmudic tricks. But that's what I see, or what I interpret when I hear that word. Much of the repressive patriarchal culture centers around the idea that men must possess and control women. For thousands of years, women were literally considered property with no rights, only obligations and duties towards their husbands and owners. And I was reading some shit the other day, actually in this book, that in 1984, if you were legally married and you're a woman and you wanted to open up a bank account, you needed your husband's permission. I mean, what the fuck? What the fuck? I mean, that's sick. But of course, you know, Jewish society. While the laws in most countries have changed, many religious and cultural traditions still persist, relegating women to second-class status, subject to the permission and control of men. Men must reject the false and limiting belief that women are to be controlled or possessed, and remove it entirely from our institutions and of culture and tradition. And a lot of this, this useless movement promotes those ideas, promotes this idea of being trad, promotes all these Judeo versions of what a woman should be, of what sexuality should be, how often someone should have sex, how many sexual partners they should have. And of course, I'm not promoting either extreme. I'm not promoting being puritanical, and I'm not promoting promiscuity. I'm promoting a healthy Aryan sexuality, obviously. This can and should start with the most obvious representation of masculine power. Together, we can challenge the concept of God as a, quote, man, who reigns alone in distant heavens as a celibate, non-sexual being with no need or desire for the feminine goddess. Sounds pretty Jewy, right? Not only is it metaphysically absurd and irrational, it also sets the entire cultural stage for the denial of the feminine and the suppression of women. How Jewy! In ancient cultures, God did not reign alone in the heavens, but was accompanied by equal co-creating divine feminine principle personified as the goddess. Among the Sumerians, the Babylonians, Egyptians, Greeks, and they say even the ancient Hebrews, this was the case. The divine feminine principle was always acknowledged and worshipped alongside her male counterpart. While some of this is still retained in the Extean tradition of the Virgin Mary, Mother of God, it is only a token gesture towards the true acknowledgement of the equal importance and place of the divine feminine. And here's a little bit about the word virgin. This is fascinating. And this makes you think of stuff like the supposed immaculate birth, which sounds rather transhumanistic to me. You got to have sex to get pregnant, right? So here we go. An important note. Ancient moon priestesses were called virgins. Virgin meant not married, not belonging to a man, a woman who was one in herself. So it doesn't mean never had sex. The very word derives from the Latin root meaning strength, force, skill, and later was applied to men, viril, and they're talking about the word vril, right? Prana, chi, vril. Ishtar, Diana, Astarte, and Isis were all, quote, virgins, which did not refer to sexual chastity, but sexual independence. And all great cultural heroes of the past, mythic or historic, were said to be born of virgin mothers. Marduk, Gilgamesh, Buddha, Osiris, Dionysus, Genghis Khan, Jesus, as well as Horus and Mithra. They were all affirmed as sons of the great mother, of the original one, of their worldly power deriving from her. Very interesting when we think about the idea of what they tell us is a virgin, right? So virgin doesn't mean chaste or celibate. Virgin means viril or vril, right? It's energy. So again, another inversion, another one of those zoggy-zog inversions. They're saying Hindu culture, I'll say Vedic culture. Vedic culture comes much closer to maintaining the balance. Well, of course it does, because it's the origin of the Aryan peoples. At least in terms of divine personification of the masculine and the feminine in the Lord Shiva and the goddess Shakti. And of course, that's the six-pointed star that the Oyves stole, also known as the Anahata, the fourth chakra. That is Shiva and Shakti together. It is the masculine and the feminine energy together, the balance, the sacred relationship. We are also seeing a reemergence of both pagan and hermetic concepts of the divine feminine as the universal life force principle, the great, quote, mother goddess. Restoring the goddess to her heavenly throne alongside her divine masculine counterpart sends the right signal culturally, and the need for balance and acceptance of the feminine power in all of our lives. Acknowledging the principles of both the divine feminine and the divine masculine is not an invitation to set against and compete as men versus women, and of course that's what Big Z always wants. Rather, it is an urge to remember that one cannot exist without the other, and they are each as only strong as their counterpart. Shifting our concept to both God and goddess as higher powers teaches us how to love, honor, worship, serve, work for these powers and energies within ourselves. Masculine and feminine energy and power present the core principles of all reality, even within our individual souls. We are all of us, both male and female in that context. And that's not some transsexual shit. I'm talking about energy. But of course, a lot of these like tranny truthers who are like Exteans will say, oh, Vedicism was venerating transsexuals. Okay, whatever. This is not a battle for supremacy, but a quest for balance between these two vital forces that constitute our universe. And together, they are all the source, God. As we move to restore this balance, our relationship with both ourselves and our higher power within each of us will expand. It will enable us to understand God as greater energy or consciousness. It is neither he or she alone, but a perfect balance and merging of the two. He and she are the two sides of the same I am. This whole and perfect power is not independent of you or I. We, as men and women, are expressions of this combined energy and must move to restore its balance within ourselves and the world. It is vital to remember to not suppress the divine masculine whilst we learn to re-embrace the divine feminine. Men also play a vital role in bringing about this change in our culture by returning to full vitality and encouraging women to be wild. A necessary part of the planet's evolution right now lies in women learning to harness their sexual, creative energy and releasing the shame associated with it. Let's see, through the focus is really on women, really it is all of our work. There is a collective force rising up on the earth today, an energy of the reborn feminine. This is a time of monumental shift from the male dominance of human consciousness back to a balanced relationship between masculine and feminine. While women become leaders in this shift by returning to their wild nature, men will recognize the need for restoration and welcome it. Our peace is in this balance. And that was a little bit there. Pretty good stuff. Stuff that you're probably not going to hear many other places. So I'm always happy to present this type of information to listeners of the broadcast. And again, that was from a book called Women Be Wild. I'm like almost done with this book. I have, I don't know, like maybe 15% of it left. But yeah, great book. I recommend it. And I think that's all I have for today's broadcast. Got about an hour and a half of broadcasting right there. But I hope you enjoyed this show called Rewilding Women. I hope it was some good food for thought, some soul food for you. And I guess I will be signing out now. It is August 9th, 2021, a Monday. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are in this world, doing something good for yourself. Be selfish, not in the way that, you know, like being selfish by like harming other people. I don't mean that. Be selfish in putting yourself first, honoring your creativity, honoring your sexuality. Your creative energy is your sexual energy. That's why Zog is always trying to get us to produce and consume, you know, because that takes us away from that energy. So just be kind to yourself, optimize yourself, and prepare yourself for our future. We're going to have a rough bit for a while, I think, with all this Zog crud, all this Oyed AI stuff going on. But if we put our nose to the grindstone and we persevere and we spiritually know what it takes to really move through this, I think we could possibly have some type of golden era after this. But a lot of people are getting sucked up and pulled under tow, not just people who are getting the Oyed AI vaccination. Of course, that's like the Pictionary definition of someone who is weak and just, you know, spiritually inept, essentially, but there are many ways to get pulled under tow in this culture. Don't allow it to happen to yourself. Venerate yourself, you know, lift yourself up, exalt yourself. So I'll be signing out now. You're listening to White Wellness, Rewilding Women, and I will catch everybody on the next broadcast. Sat Nam, everybody.